2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on. Weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Thursday the 12th of May and this is Game On. Coming up today, Bernard Jackman is in studio to set us up for another Aviva Stadium showdown in the Champions Cup with Leinster versus Toulouse.
Like, what more could you want in the occasion? Like, you're looking at the double champions from last year, 5 times winners of the Champions Cup. Like, so we need that home support, and that could easily make the difference, just having that support, give us that energy in the game and get us over the line.
In Gaelic football, former Kerry great and now Offaly selector Tomás O'Shea will tell us how he's adjusting to life on the sideline. And in soccer, it's another big night in the Premier League as Arsenal travel to Spurs with the Champions League football spot at stake.
We are playing this game for an important target and a place in Champions League. And for sure, we know very well, I know very well the importance of for our fans.
It's different because the history about the North London, we all know about it and what it means to our fans.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Welcome along. I'm delighted to say that journalist David Snaid and former rugby player Bernard Jackman are with me in studio as we build up to a very busy weekend of sport. Bernard, there's lots happening, but the thing that caught most people's interest today was the video of the Gaelic footballer playing quite a long period of a match with a mobile phone in his hand and he was talking on it.
Yeah, I remember I was in the bad books in Connacht back in the day. We played Bezier in the Challenge Cup final and Clontarf were playing the same time. And at that stage, you were very much invested in your club because it was you only played a few games for your province. And Eric Elwood caught me at halftime having a sneaky look at my phone in my bag to see the result. And I didn't live it down for a long time. But that fella on the going around on the viral playing a GA match, he was on his phone for a couple of minutes. So it's quite comical, really.
Yeah, for anyone that didn't see it. So it, like, I might be insulting a group of players, but it looked like probably junior standards, a lot of daisies on the pitch. And the ball wasn't moving that fast. But this fella had the phone up to his ears. At one stage, he's involved in the play in a couple of occasions. He actually told the person on the phone to hang on a second while he went, and I think he went back and defended and cleared the ball, did a couple of hand passes, all while holding the mobile phone.
And in fairness, he also tried to do the umpire's job for him as well, didn't he? Because he went hand across sign. But he's just kind of, even just looking at it, it kind of just strikes me. I think amateur sports people everywhere around the country would just look at that and just laugh, because like you could just imagine it happening in probably any sport where there's probably lads who just rock up. And it's a bit of crack for them. I was just making a joke to Bernard earlier. There's probably lads even before that who'll probably be doing a pre-warm-up for about half an hour to get their bodies ready. And then this lad is rocking about on the phone. But even maybe think, even just as Bernard was saying that there too, I remember doing an interview with Simon Cox. Obviously, he played for Ireland, played Euros 2012. And he's a massive Liverpool fan, like absolutely huge Liverpool fan. And he was named on the bench at Anfield for a match. And I remember telling me that he wanted to go on to the bench and video You'll Never Walk Alone beforehand from the bench so he could send it on to his mates. Because he thought, like, when else would he be in this position in the ground to be able to do it? And it was only because one of his teammates talked him out of it that he refused to do it. Then he said, I don't want to get a fine.
I can see why he would want to do that. But if anybody does know this guy who went viral over the last 24 hours, do let us know, because I have so many questions. I want to know who he was talking to, what he was talking about. Did they know he was playing a match? Yeah. Because he wasn't really indicating that he was.
He's definitely had form for it, because no one goes near him. His teammates are like, no, do you know what? I think Jack knows what he's doing, and
they might not have had a sub and he had to play and he had to take the work call or whatever, but
there are a lot of questions. There really are. And as well, I think you could look at it another way and say, look, he's sacrificing a huge amount. Like, he's obviously doing what he has to do on the phone and trying to play the football, so he clearly probably had to be somewhere else, but says, no, I'll go out and play for my club. So I think we do need to get in touch with this
maybe
guy.
Maybe he was trying to sell his Bitcoin investment. Apparently that's slided down massively, so maybe he's trying to get out of the trade
or something like that.
He looked busy for sure. So we do have a lot to get through aside from that viral video. A lot of rugby news today, Bernard, and I think probably the place to start really is with the Ireland team, because there's an awful lot of excitement about the games that they're going to have coming up in the autumn. So they're going to be meeting the Springboks and Australia in those autumn series. And like, what teams to be welcoming here?
Yeah, look at
Fiji as well.
Yeah, Fiji, it's probably the best bunch of games in when you put them all together, because Fiji always draw a crowd. They are full of incredible players. So many good Fijians playing in Europe, and they tend to get them back together for November. They've got a good set piece now, so they're a big draw. And then you've got the two tier one countries, the world champions, the Springboks coming to town. Obviously, you beat the Lions, and a real good test for us. And then Australia, a little bit of difficulty financially in Australian rugby, but Dave Rennie's gone in there and they seem to have found some new talent. So look, if you look at the games Ireland have coming up, three tests against the All Blacks, two matches against the New Zealand Maoris, and then the Springboks, the Wallabies, Fiji, 12 months is a bit out from a World Cup. We're going to get a pretty good gauge to where we are on a global stage. Obviously, we know we're not far away in terms of Europe and the Six Nations. France a little bit ahead of us, but I think Andy Farrell and the players will be very excited, but also very daunted. It's a daunting schedule.
Yeah, it really is, and as you said, like it doesn't get better than those games that are coming up. It's hard to believe it's been so long since Ireland have played the Springboks, 2017.
Yeah, it's incredible, and they present a different test than Australia and New Zealand. France have the power, but also they have the X factor. The Springboks play a very kind of narrow, tactically smart, low risk game, and I just think it's going to be really fascinating to see how the type of rugby we're trying to play at the moment, which is based on tempo and taking risks, how that works against the defence, which has been the best defence in world rugby for the last 3 or 4 years.
Two words for you though: squad depth. Going
to
need it.
Yeah, and I think that's why he wants to bring 42 to New Zealand, and it's probably the last chance. If you don't make that 42 New Zealand bar injury, you're probably not going to get to the World Cup. That's just the reality of it, because there'll be very little rotation, I think, in November, a little bit for Fiji, but it'll be full metal jacket. Then you're into Six Nations, then you're into a World Cup. So I think the last few weeks of the URC for the teams who are in the playoffs, obviously the Leinster lads are getting a chance to play in the knockout stage, the final stage of Europe. There is a lot of pressure on to perform to get on the plane to New Zealand.
As well as finding out Ireland's fixtures for the autumn series, you've also found out who is going to be hosting the next couple of Rugby World Cups. So Australia and the USA have been confirmed as the host countries for 2027 and 2031, respectively. It was known, but now it's confirmed. And I guess as venues, Australia, you can kind of picture that, but the USA would be quite interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a massive statement from World Rugby. They've got a professional league now. Now, the salaries and the level of professionalism isn't anything like here in the MLR, but I think this is going to give those franchisee owners massive confidence in stay in the game, because obviously they're hoping that the World Cup, when it comes, will create a different level of interest, different level of sponsorship, TV deals. So it probably, hopefully, will develop America, a USA, as a genuine rugby nation, even though there's so much competition. But it's badly needed, because USA have to qualify for this World Cup in a playoff game against Chile. So it's coming at a time when rugby there is very much on the down, or Canada didn't qualify for the World Cup. So two countries who were probably there at the very start of professionalism now look to be struggling a little bit. So I think it's a good move for world rugby, as they try and look at Japan was done to try and grow the game in Asia. And giving the World Cup to USA is very much a part of trying to grow the game in North America.
I was going to say, how would that be viewed by people maybe more traditionalists or whatever, in terms of maybe going to a country that wouldn't be more common for it?
I think we all accept that we have to grow the game. It's so, look at football. Football is a global game. Cricket is only in a certain amount of countries, but the populations of those countries are massive. We kind of have the same teams all the time competing, and every so often at a World Cup some tier 2 countries get some extra money and they come there, but they're not really in generally competitive, they're cannon fodder. So I think look at Ireland, obviously tried to host the World Cup that was awarded to France. We didn't go for this one, and we would love a shot at it at some stage, but I think moving it to America is really important. And also I think it's important Australia get the next one, because after France, because they're very much hemorrhaging money, and hopefully the World Cup there will provide enough cash for rugby to grow or to sustain over the following 5 or 6 years.
That'd be a big thing as well, especially post-COVID, wouldn't it, as well? Massive. Associations being badly needed of getting those funds.
Yeah, look, the American or USA rugby went bankrupt about 2 years ago. Australia wouldn't be far away from it. So Australia generally rely on a Lions tour to keep them going till the next time they get a World Cup, because that's how much money those competitions or tours make for them. So yeah, rugby, look, there's not the same amount of benefactors in rugby as there is in football, and it's a very, very tight line between staying alive or going broke.
Is it player pool though? Like, is it a case that when you look at America, it's generating a whole different type of player and just player numbers?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the reality is the best athletes don't play rugby. They may drift into rugby at 22, 23 when the NFL or the NBA or college football dream.
They're so glamorous, you see, those sports in college.
No, 100%. Yeah, that's it. And sure, the World Cup. It's like, you know, the Olympics is a massive draw for good athletes in America, because it's a huge part of their culture, and there's funds there to help them go stay professional or work towards Olympics. I think rugby being there for World Cup will open up the game to so many different people. But the reality is, unless they're then able to follow up that with getting it played in schools, getting it the clubs, like some of the clubs over there, not the MLR clubs, the professionals, but some clubs are you know, sharing a pitch in a park, you know, and they're getting changed out of the back of their car, which we're used to in the GA. We used to be used to in GA, but obviously now nearly every GA in the club has great facilities.
Soccer
as well. Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, but it's because there's not enough numbers playing the game in the US, and obviously the cost of travelling across the US to play in another club, it's generally a flight, you know, when you go outside your local league. So I think the World Cup is a right thing to do, to give to the US, and then obviously, of course, they need to have a really good plan to try and maximise the return of that.
Yeah, because as you said, the competition is so massive. I'm sure you've been to college games, I've been to college football and college basketball, and even just seeing the facilities in these universities. I've taken a tour of DePaul University in Chicago, just absolutely mind-blowing stuff that they have access to. I can see why the best athletes in the country go and play those sports where all the money and resources are. The Women's World Cup as well, the next few years were decided. So England in 2025 and then Australia for 27 and 29, which, as you said, Australia, much needed. They need that boost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Women's World Cup in England, we've seen how they've really grasped this idea of professionalism, but also participation, community. Like I could see that final in Twickenham being a sellout. You know what I mean? Like, I really think that the support is there, and all we're looking for is to keep giving women's rugby the opportunity to showcase itself with good crowds, with TV, with media coverage. And I think England already have their house in order, but that's just going to drive it to a new level. And hopefully, you know, the Wales, Scotland, Ireland, France, who play in the same competition as them, will get a benefit of that. But I think that's a huge, hugely positive move for women's rugby. And obviously, this year they have got it in New Zealand, which you would hope would be well supported as well.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, because they seem to be at the very last minute investing in their own team as well. So I think at this stage they're going to have no choice but to support it, because there are so many eyeballs on them now because of everything that has happened with women's rugby down in New Zealand over the last year or so. Graham Rowntree is starting to get his house in order as well. He has added Andy Carriaco to his coaching ticket, so he's going to be the forwards coach, promoted from inside.
I think it's good when you look at Mike Prendergast going home, you know, son of Limerick, Dennis Leamy, son of Tipperary, going home with experience of Leinster. Obviously, Mike has experience as top 14. And then Kiraku, you know, was involved in Wales. He was involved in the championship in the UK. Played a little bit. I actually played with him in Sale. Really good fellow, Irish qualified. And he's been working away in the academy there. So, like, the reality is, you know, I'm taking a presumption here, but Graham will be hands-on with the forwards. You know what I mean? That's his area of strength. He's not going to go upstairs. He's going to be a head coach who's got his hands on the team. But realistically as well, he needs to have a buffer. He needs to have an assistant, somebody who can help him with that, take away a lot of the the work you need to do in terms of analysis, take away some of the reviews, so he can do the other things, which is, you know, manage his staff, manage the game plan, manage up to the recruitment, media, stakeholders, etc. So having someone like Andy, who obviously would have been working close to Graham this year, who has, you know, it's not a risk taking him up because Graham knows what he can do and he knows what Graham likes. Whereas you bring in somebody from outside, there's that bedding in period. They still have to bed in with Dennis and Mike. So I just think having somebody very much aligned who knows those academy players who are coming through in big numbers is a really good positive step.
Remember, we've been chatting about this over the last number of weeks where it seemed to be a case that they were in a bit of a state of flux. They hadn't made that appointment to actually name who the head coach was going to be. Now there seems to be a bit of a flurry of appointments. Does it seem to be a case that they're actually getting the house in order now a little bit?
No, absolutely, yeah. Like, look, they took them a while to do it, but they announced it the week before Exeter at home. They won that, then they went to Ulster away, won, then they went to...
So just keep announcing new staff.
Well, it might be a coincidence. I think, you know, there's certainly a talk to the players, just said, look, we need to bring what we can to the pitch as well. But that clarity of what the future looks like. And in fairness, Graham has been working. He was, even though the interview process took a long time, there's no doubt he would have had presented in his interview what his staff looked like. So the conversations probably happened. They just obviously couldn't follow through on him and give him a contract. So it is coming together now. And Munster fans are on a high because it's all coming together. It looks really positive. They narrowly lost to Toulouse, and there's a lot of positives in that. They're still a couple of players short of being contenders. Just because they ran Toulouse close doesn't mean that they're going to be... I heard someone say, oh, they're one of the favourites for the European Cup next year. No chance. Like, they need a tight-head prop, okay, because they're losing John Ryan, and they need a hooker who's a scrummaging hooker, because you saw against... Like, they lost six scrum penalties against Toulouse. You're not going to get away with that at the knockout stages of Europe. So... It looks really good. There's positive moves happening. But I think now they need the backing of the board to go out and get two front row players. And then they have a squad that I think on paper has the capacity to win a European Cup. And that's where Munster should be judged. You know, that's the level of fan base they have, the level of history they have. But I don't think the current squad without two front rowers can do it.
I was curious, is that something that you think could be done quickly, or is it a case of actually, like, what does success for Munster in the short term look like? Is it, well, actually, you just need those couple of quality additions, or there may be something a bit more kind of in-depth needs to be done?
No, I think that the reality is that the best way to guarantee your future is to get success quickly. So for Graham will want to have his own level of success quickly. They have two good young tight end props that they haven't brought through, I think, as fast as they needed to. So now you're going into next season wondering, are they good enough? But the reality is there's no team who consider themselves Champions Cup contenders who don't have a tight head who will start for international level, you know, and that's the challenge for Munster at the moment.
Are they out there, though?
They're not really, that's the problem. They're not really. But you
have
to go
spend.
They're
in America, is what you're saying.
No, they're not American. No. Look, for example, the Lions tight head prop Sadie just signed for Sharks, so now they've got two brilliant tight heads. Sadie's a very good scrummaging tight head. Like, that's what Munster need. They just need a scrummaging tight head who doesn't give away penalties and gives them that security there. So
what's the most important player now on the pitch when you look at player pool and how difficult it is to get a player of type?
Look, at tight head prop,
Are they the striker now in soccer?
Yeah, they are.
It's a goalkeeper now, isn't it? The goalkeeper.
It goes in cycles. So Jake White, the Bulls coach, said the first player he puts on the pitch is his left-footed kicker, and the second one is a second left-footed kicker. So he thinks that's massive, having a left-footed kicker. But most coaches will say, you know, a tight-head prop who can give you certainty at scrum time is invaluable. In the URC, in the pool stage in Europe, Munster will not get exposed. It's not just Munster, it's an Irish rugby problem. Leinster conceded some key penalties against Leicester, but because they were 20-0 up, you know, people don't remember that. And because Munster lost due to a penalty shootout, people aren't talking about the scrum because everyone's focused on the missed kicks. But when you go back through the game, there were so many key moments that they couldn't capitalise on territory or possession, or they couldn't get out of trouble because of the scrum. And that's in Ireland against England in the Six Nations, because of the red card, Ireland were never going to lose the match. But when you look at the scrum, we gave away a lot of penalties. So in a closer game, that could be crucial. And look, that's the challenge for Leinster against Toulouse this weekend, is to not let the scrum become a weakness for them.
Before we do move on to that Leinster game, like, you obviously have your finger on the pulse with all that's happening in club rugby and also what's coming through. Are we bringing through the players that we need?
I think we probably should go back to having a bit of a project for front rows. I know Leinster did it years ago with Reggie Corrigan, was basically appointed to go out and identify young front rows, and it's a real slow burner. You know, you're going to have to find guys 19, 20 who maybe weren't brilliant at schools level. So at schools level, you can only push a metre and a half in the scrum, right? So the smart schools, they put in a flanker who's strong, and then they have the flanker's ability around the pitch, because the scrum isn't, you know, a key part of winning and losing. But the problem is, you know, that's not good for the development of front rows, because that flanker will never become an international loose head or tight head because of his body size. So I think there could be a case, there has to be a case for doing something a little bit different to make sure that we have a conveyor belt of front rows, because at the moment we're very lucky at hooker. We're not so lucky at loose head, in that there's no obvious replacement for Andrew Porter. David Kilcoyne and Keane Healy are at the other end of their career. They've been brilliant, but it's not clear who the next best loose head is. And obviously, behind Tadhg Furlong, we're not stacked. So, yeah, I think it could be it's an area that we're okay when we have our frontline guys fit. But behind that, there's probably a bit of work to do.
See, when you were talking earlier about kind of developing, say, players in a specific position, let's say 19 or 20, like, this is probably maybe my own ignorance and lack of understanding from a rugby perspective, but coming from a football point of view, like, it's so often thought that, well, you know, you need to start developing lads, let's say 13, 14, 15 latest, and then if they haven't got certain skills by that point, the chances of them making it are very slim, and then it's about just their natural professional development at that point. So can lads be, even at that age, 19, 20, 21, be taught the specifics of a position to then go on and become international quality players?
Yeah, they can, absolutely, as long as they're coachable. But if they're not 125, 130 kilos, strong as an ox in the gym, mentally tough, explosive, there's no chance. You can teach them everything else.
Video at the start.
You can teach them everything else. I remember when we were in Grenoble, we had a big prop. He was 18, he was 140 kilos, really lazy, really kind of easy on himself, not aggressive. You know, struggled a lot with fitness, struggled a lot with physicality, and the Anglo-Saxons, as we were called, mentality was, what's he doing in the academy? We should be just getting rid of him. And we also had a 2 metre tall second row who was uncoachable at the time, but he was 2 metres tall. And my director of rugby, and Mike Prendergast knows these two lads, my director of rugby kept saying, look, he's 2 metres tall, you know, he will make it, you know, because he actually had a good engine. He's very good aerobically, and now he's played for Bordeaux, he played for Toulon, he played for La Rochelle. Grenoble sold him for about $250,000, and the tie head prop that was no good is now Racing's first choice tie head, because they're now 25, 26, you know what I mean? Yeah. But if he hadn't had that patience and saw the long term plan, and the only reason we kept him was because there was a sale value for them. So basically, in France, if you sell a player out of your academy, you can sell. But if we were talking about, can this fella next week help Grenoble win a top 14 game, there was no chance. So in Ireland, where everything is micromanaged and it's all state, it's all funded from a central fund, I think we should have the patience for that late developer who has a physical trait that no one else has.
Okay, well, since we are talking about physicality and moving on to Leinster and Toulouse, let's hear from Ronan Kelleher, who was out speaking to the media this week.
I would imagine that they're going to test you pretty hard physically at the scrum after the breakdown. I mean, the line-out's going to be pretty key as well. The areas that you're concerned with, to be fair.
Yeah, we saw what they were able to do in that Munster game. Obviously, they're a very strong pack, and their tie five are particularly physical. And yeah, that's an area that we were looking at today, and we're coming up with our game plan. And at the end of the day, it's going to come down to us and just about us in the pack, just fronting up and in that area and making sure that we're on the right side of good results and the set piece goes our way.
It's a real 23-man effort, isn't it? I mean, you see that with them, even, you know, bringing people off the bench. I'm not saying you don't, you do, but I mean, and you've got to go literally till, well, at least 80 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as you said, like our bench is, I suppose, equally as strong. And yeah, they obviously do. They have gone 6-2 in the past, making sure they bring in their big, powerful ball carriers and their players, making sure they don't skip a beat there. But I suppose that's where we're going to make sure that we're switched on and we're ready to go for the full 80. And yeah, we'll be ready to mash them.
Ronan Gallagher there speaking to Michael Corcoran ahead of the Leinster-Toulouse game. Bernard, an awful lot of the analysis and commentary around this game is just handing it to Leinster before the game even starts. Should there be concerns?
Absolutely. Toulouse aren't playing at the level that they played it last year to win the double. But yet they're full of top quality international players with X factor. And part of the reason they're not playing well is they're very loose, right? And those passes aren't sticking, or they're not resourcing a key breakdown. But those passes start to stick. They have incredible ability. And look, they're underdogs because they played extra time last weekend. They went home. They're coming back. A lot of their players were involved in France. You know, like, I think I saw Antoine Dupont, their nines game minutes this year is 1,500 odd. Gibson Park is 900. So, you know, the player management system that we have here has hopefully left our players fresh. You know, Leinster went to South Africa without their internationals. They looked really good against Leicester, whereas obviously Toulouse look a bit fatigued. But a team like Toulouse, who have won this competition, 10 of their players won a Grand Slam away with France, they will sense the opportunity, the importance, the challenge ahead of them. And I think they're certainly not going to lie down. And as Ronan Keller said there, you know, they've, like France, they go 6-2 split, and they bring on six powerful, aggressive forwards for that last 20 minutes. And it's going to be a huge test for Leinster.
Yeah, it really will. Home advantage, though, will count for a lot, you'd have to imagine, too.
Yeah, and I think ticket sales are going to be big, and Leinster will feed off that. Look, I think this Leinster team deserve to win a European Cup, but they're not going to get it handed to them. They've been consistently one of the best teams in Europe for the last 3 or 4 years, but have fallen short, you know, against Saracens twice and against La Rochelle. And they're at a stage now where they've got a home semi-final. You know, you would have to fancy them to be good enough to win it. In terms of they don't give many errors away. They don't give many mistakes, don't give you many ins to the game. And that's what Toulouse generally live off. So I think Leinster will get the job done. And may go on to win the competition, or should go on to win the competition, but this is a serious test.
We were chatting before we came on air, just I was curious about how Leinster will be regarded elsewhere. Like, maybe certain people might have preconceptions about them in Ireland, or you could be one of them.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of image of the Brown Thomas. I remember a video that added the picture of the Leinster fan outside the RDS having come straight from Brown Thomas, and that just like sticks in my head. But I'd be curious of like what, like you're saying there about how they deserve to win, say, a European Cup. Would that be something that maybe other clubs in the game look at them and say what they do and how they go about it is the right way?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of you, like Fabien Galthié, the French coach, came over with his manager to spend some few days in Leinster last year, kind of seeing what the secret was. And to be honest, they'd be massively respected, feared to a certain extent because they're so consistent. But, you know, not beating Saracens, not having 3 or 4 Champion Cups in a row give other teams hope. You know what I mean? So you can't say you're the dominant team if you're not winning the trophy. So they will be very well respected. The idea of them being a soft touch, which they were back in 2000s when I was there to start, that's gone now. Like they're well able to mix it with anybody. But I do think for their legacy, you know, they need to be winning European Cups.
And I would say, like, even, and again, this was coming back to my own ignorance of the matter, but I think what should be admired for them, and you were saying this as well, is even though maybe like their budget could be serious and the amount of money they have, but they're not going off just like picking off the best players from different teams here, there and everywhere abroad. They're actually developing their own, which as well was to be admired.
Yeah, and that's the model here is very much have a high percentage of homegrown players, or sorry, Irish qualified players. Leinster managed to keep, there's hardly ever, in sport they call it no regretted losses, so someone signs somewhere else, you know, you don't want him to be a player that you wanted to keep, it's because you can't keep him or you couldn't match him financially. Leinster very rarely lose anybody. I think the last high profile one was Johnny Sexton go to Racing, they managed to bring him back, but since then the players leave and generally haven't been first choice. So yeah, they spend their money on the majority of the money to spend on is keeping their best homegrown players in Leinster, which is obviously admirable, and probably compensates for the fact that they've their budget is significantly bigger than everyone else.
Yeah, and they're winning too as well, so, well, most of the time, and probably will this weekend. Most people are predicting anyway, Bernard, you included?
Yeah, I think Leinster win by 5.
Okay, let's take a very quick break. We still have a lot to get through. Tomás O'Shea will be joining us to talk Gaelic football, and David will be going through all of the soccer.
RTE 2FM. Game on. On 2FM. With Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on. On 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to Gaelic games, and today it was announced that organic dairy producer Glenisk have signed up for a 5-year partnership with Offaly GAA, Camogie and Go Games. They are going to support all ages, and I'm delighted to say that Offaly selector Tomás O'Shea joins us now on the line. Tomás, how are you?
Hi, Marie. How are you?
Good to chat to you. I think I've spoken to you as a player, as a pundit, and now as a selector, so you're moving on up. Or down, depending on what way you look at it. Tomás, we were talking at the top of the show about, I don't know if you saw the viral video of the GAA player, the footballer, going around the pitch, playing a match, talking on the phone.
Yeah, Eddie Pocket, I saw it, yeah.
Well, we've managed to track him down and we're going to be chatting to him a little bit earlier on. But I'm wondering, did you ever see anything like that before?
No, I can't say I did. What I found the funniest altogether was that nobody actually gave Morolicky. He must have told exactly. Beforehand that he was expecting the call or something, because nobody seemed too bothered that he was on the phone.
Everybody has a lot of questions about how the whole thing played out, and we will be chatting to him just before 7, so please do stay tuned, and if you have any questions about what he was doing and how it all ended, do let us know. But Tomás, so you have a new role with Offaly for a while now. I haven't chatted to you since you've taken over or got involved, so why Offaly first?
I really had no plan to get involved with any inter-country team at all, and it just came out of the blue. I was involved with UCC in Cork and with Glanmire GAA the last number of years there, and it just the offer just presented itself in the form of Michael Dignan and John Mahon talking to me and asking me to get involved with them as a selector. And you know, after talking to two lads, and you know, you just announced there that Vincent Cleary and his family with Glenisk, they are ambitious. They're a small county in terms of numbers, but they're ambitious in what they want to do, and they want to do it the right way. They want to invest in the youth, and it is phenomenal to have the likes of Glenisk coming into a county like that and backing them for the amount of time that they are backing them. It's tremendous news with that, and I suppose there is a feel-good factor in Offaly with the young lads coming through. But Michael Dignan is a good guy. He's a GAA guy. He understands the game, and he puts his mouth, I suppose, in his heart where he's spoken about in the past. And it's a country that I would I love their history. I love what they have achieved in the game. Players back along, I would have been brought up on Terry in the 70s and the 80s, and Offaly were a huge part of that story. So it's hard to describe, but I love the attitude that's in the county towards their sport and towards their football. And with all that, and talking to John Mahon and talking to Michael Dignan, I was delighted to get involved. And I am delighted since I got involved, because the lads that are above there, and I suppose any coach or selector or manager would tell you that, you know, when you have a group of lads who are hungry to learn and hungry for success, it makes all the difference. And it hasn't been a great year in terms of results, but it was a tough Division 2 for Offaly, and I would still say that the future is bright up there, and there's a lot of good young lads coming through the ranks. And when you couple that with the likes of Niall McNamee, who's still shining at 36 years of age, you know, I'm glad I'm involved with them, and I'm really enjoying it, really, to be honest with you.
So what kind of a role do you have then? Because I think you've been involved in so many different setups with people coming and going. You've probably seen the role of selector take many different guises. Some are really into coaching, some are really into tactics, some are just there to be a sounding board. What kind of a role do you have within the setup, Tomás?
I'd be into everything that you just mentioned. I'd be into the tactic side of it. I'd be into the tactic side. Just because I played as a defender wouldn't mean that I have any interest or any input in terms of what forwards would do or goalies would do or anything like that. I think the game has become more tactical. I think the game has become, there's a lot more emphasis on the S&C side of things and the physicality of it. But I do think the modern game, back in my day, Maria, a selector would sit down and watch training, and that would be it. Very rarely even speak. Some of them would speak in a kind of a tactical way to any players or anything of the sort. It was a manager that did most of that. And I think nowadays most managements would admit that it's hands on deck for everybody. So there's a bit of coaching, there's a bit of talking. But I love that. I love talking to lads, getting inside lads' heads. I have the confidence to contribute in that way. Get involved in the coaching, get involved in the football especially. Whatever style we want to play, and it's time consuming. It's unbelievable that I suppose my eyes have been opened to the amount of time that these players are putting in on and off the pitch. They really are sacrificing an awful lot, and it's so do management. You know, it's all consuming, and it was the way it was when I was playing. But not to the extent that it is now, in terms of the extra stuff, like in terms of the tactics, in terms of the analysis, in terms of the S&C and the weights. That stuff wasn't there. And it isn't a million years ago. I'm not that old, Marie. It was 2013 when I packed up. But I'd love, you know what, a lot of fellas say, geez, I'd love a quarter to do again in terms of having a go off what they have. Because to be fair, and every county, inter-county team are analysing the game a lot more. They are trying to get every edge, and it's interesting, the tactically and everything we've spoken about in terms of the training and the setups, the defensive setups and the attacking setups and the skills of the game. It is. I enjoy it, and I'm really enjoying my time above there at the moment, yeah.
I know you're not doing punditry anymore, but I'd imagine as well it's given you a completely different perspective from that point of view, just an understanding of the challenges that are in different counties and just maybe the comparisons to the so-called lesser counties compared to the ones that might have a bigger pick of players or better facilities, all that sort of stuff that comes into how you shape and set up and develop your team.
It certainly would, Marie, and I think a lot of guys in punditry possibly come from bigger teams, and they wouldn't have the understanding, and I'd include myself in that when I was on the circuit, they wouldn't have the understanding of what actually goes in and how hard it is difficultly mentally when possibly you think that you can't achieve what the bigger teams achieve. And you can talk about every single thing, finance, resources, everything comes into play. Numbers, the amount of people you have playing the sport in the county, the success at underage level, the work that goes on in schools, it's all linked, it's all intertwined. And again, the likes of Glenys, the boost that will give Offaly it's unbelievable actually, because they'll be able to put the proper resources where it should be in the youth of the county to make sure that the hurlers and the footballers of Offaly will come through. But I do think the point you're making is that I have a better understanding. I mean, take for example the younger lads on the squad. Like it or lump it, Offaly in terms of numbers don't have the pick in the squad, the squads that other counties would have, which is fine. They did unbelievably brilliantly to come up to Division 2 this year, and it was going to be a huge ask for them to stay above in Division 2. And as it turned out, the shortened season, the Sigerson played hell with us, because a lot of our young lads are playing Sigerson, up to 9-10 lads playing Sigerson, and the Sigerson lasted. I'm a pro Sigerson man. I think it has to have a place, a proper place, proper respect in our calendar. But that had a huge effect on us, because we needed to get a good start, and for 6 weeks there were a lot of lads that weren't there. Then you had the 20s, and like in a lump it again, because of the situation we're in, Offaly do rely on the young lads and rely on under-20s, yet the under-20 championship was smack bang in preparation for that was bang in the middle of it as well. And it is very, very difficult for you. You, if you're coming from a Dublin or a Kerry or a Mayo, you don't have to use maybe the younger lads to the same degree. And it's not as if to say, put the lads to one side and get replace them. They aren't there. The numbers, the depth isn't there. And that's has opened my eyes. But the attitude to the lads, and it's phenomenal. It's a way easier. I always say, they were always asking me when I was playing football, how would you come back? It was easy to come back every year with Kerry because you knew you had a good chance of being up in Kildare, because that was the bottom line. And it's a way, I'd have unbelievable admiration for, sorry, I have a small one here.
Oh, you're grand, don't worry.
I'd have unbelievable admiration for the lads in so-called weaker teams that drive themselves and want, are so ambitious. It's opened my eyes. That's the biggest thing since I've got into it. I got involved in that.
It's a different sort of dedication and commitment, really, when you don't have the realistic chance of getting Sam McGuire at the end of it.
In terms of Division 2 is huge for us, huge. And the Leinster Championship is huge for us. So it's not that we don't have goals. Of course we have goals. And we'll have goals. Our goals are just as big as any other county in the country. And I don't think other people realise that at times. And people are saying, oh, well, they have the hunger for the Talton Cup, but they have the hunger for so-called lesser competitions. Why wouldn't they? That's what they train for. And thanks be to God, all the players inside Offaly and John and all the management, they're all mad for road for this and looking forward to it.
It's all about winning matches at the end of the day, Tomás, isn't it?
Of course.
Greer, thanks so much for joining us. And as you mentioned there, just having Glenys there, it's brilliant for Offaly to have that consistency and commitment from such a big sponsor and such a local one as well. Will mean a lot to the county. And best of luck to you as well, Tomás. The draw is Monday morning, as far as I'm aware, for the Talton Cup.
It is Monday morning, so
right. Well, it'll all become clear then. We won't even get into it now. talk to you again. Thanks, Tomás. Bye bye.
Thanks.
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. The big Premier League game of the night is the meeting of Arsenal and Spurs in the North London Derby, with Spurs hosting Arsenal at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And Nigel Bidweed is standing by for us. Nigel.
Well, we have the team news that's just come through, and the Tottenham manager Antonio Conte has been forced into making a change to the side that played so well in the 1-1 draw at Liverpool last weekend. Centre-half Christian Romero is injured, so in comes Davinson Sanchez. Arsenal are unchanged from their last game. Winger Bukayo Saka has passed a fitness test, but central defender Ben White is only fit enough for the bench. Now, with three games to play in the race to finish fourth and qualify for next season's Champions League, Arsenal hold a 4-point advantage over Tottenham. If the Gunners win this evening, they'll qualify for the elite European competition for the first time in 6 years. So this is a must-win game for Spurs, who will want to avoid a repeat of the reversed fixture back in September, when they conceded three goals in the first 34 minutes and lost 3-1. To be fair, though, that was under former manager Nuno Espirito Santos, and Spurs are a different proposition with Antonio Conte at the helm. He's won 14 of his 25 league games in charge and has dragged Spurs right back in to the Champions League reckoning. We're underway for the North London Derby at 7:45.
Thanks so much, Nigel. And just that you mentioned Conte there and how he has dragged his team to the position that they're in now, tactically, should we expect anything different from him tonight, do you think?
Well, it's really interesting, because he plays a counter-attacking style, and I think there's a feeling that he doesn't quite have the wing-back, the talent at wing-back. Don't forget, Matt Doherty is injured and out for the season. He doesn't quite have the talent at wing-back to really go for it. But Spurs need a win. A draw's no good for them, because that would leave Arsenal in pole position, 4 points ahead of them with two games to play. So what Antonio Conte does tactically will be really interesting this evening. Don't forget, he has world-class forwards in Harry Kane and Heung-min Son. So if it was me in charge, I'd say to those two lads, let's go for it, and you get us the goals that are going to help us qualify for the Champions League. But Antonio Conte is a wily old campaigner, isn't he? So I expect him to keep it tight for the maybe even the first hour or so, and then if they need to, they will cut loose.
So since you have your crystal ball out, then what will Arteta do you think?
I think Mikel Arteta plays, the type of football that sort of Wenger used to play, which is, this is us, this is how we're going to play, and you know, you'll have to deal with it. And they play with a double pivot, so it's a 4-2-3-1. It's quite defensive sometimes, but they're missing Thomas Partey, who is a key member of the side. Ben White isn't there. Kieran Tierney is also a very important member of the team that's missing. But I think they're workmanlike, Arsenal. They go about their business with a great deal of energy and passion and commitment, and I think that's how they'll play. Both teams will play to win, but I just fancy Spurs will just pick their moments perhaps a little bit more.
And it's going to be absolutely an amazing atmosphere by the sounds of it.
Well, it will be. This stadium is absolutely superb. And this is the first game at this stadium with a full crowd for a North London derby. It is an amazing stadium, a fantastic place to watch football. But coming to the ground and talking to some friends, because I don't live very far from here, and talking to some friends earlier, Tottenham fans are very nervous about this evening. They have got a lot to lose. And in the boardroom at Spurs, they're looking at this game going, we've got to pay for this new stadium. We need to make the Champions League. So a lot of pressure on Tottenham tonight, trying to eat away at that 4-point Arsenal lead in the race for the Champions League.
Nigel, thank you so much for joining us. That game kicks off at 7:45, and it does sound like it's going to be a cracker, David Snead.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those where it's like the short-termism of Spurs versus maybe a club like Arsenal, who have actually put a bit of faith in a manager and look to be a bit of a, trying to have a long-term plan. And he's even just signed a new contract there recently as well. And it's kind of like, it's almost like Spurs even this season under Conte, like after he got beaten by Burnley, wasn't it, earlier, not so long ago, when he was like talking about quitting. Like, they just seem to be almost one or two games away from a crisis with Conte and all the rest of it. He just seems to be dragging all this drama around it. Whereas Arsenal, in fairness to them, and it's only happened really under Arteta, that he's brought this sense of stability. Like, there's still weaknesses there and there's still vulnerabilities there, but like, if you're looking at a club who are in and around the mix, you kind of say, well, do you know what, Arsenal are the ones who maybe deserve it, because they're the ones who are trying to put that plan in place and trying to bring through some of their own young players, put trust in a young coach. And if that comes to fruition, there'd be no better place for Arsenal to do it than, I think there's, I have a couple of banners on today. They've already won the league at the All White Hart Lane, they won the league at Old Trafford, but if they were to go there and get a result and win at the new White Hart Lane essentially, I think that'll be a result that a lot of their fans will look back on with a lot of fondness. Not quite the same as winning the league, but for this group of players it could be seriously significant, especially for Arteta at this stage.
Yeah, for sure. He's done a lot of work, and as you said, a lot of faith was put into him after that rocky start to the season. Yeah. Well, now, it's been one of the busiest weeks for sport, like so much going on, and yet we have spent pretty much a good chunk of this show talking about a viral video of a footballer playing a game with his phone in his hand. And I am delighted to say that Laura Lee, our BCO, has tracked him down. His name is Dennis Brennan, and he is from Park Rathenesca in County Leash. Dennis, you're very welcome to the show. It's quite interesting that we've spent so much time talking about you, but that shows how entertaining your video is. And we have so many questions. First of all, how are you now that you're a viral sensation?
I'm still the same. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, good to hear you're still grounded anyway. You haven't changed. First of all, if you don't mind me asking, did you bring the phone in the sock? Did somebody hand it to you? Like, did you get a call? Was there a plan? Tell us how it all happened.
I got a few phone calls from the customer leading up to the match. And I thought I'd dealt with him, but I kept the phone to the young fella Owen, and I just told him to be standing near to me because they were going to ring it in. Just throwing the phone to me if they rang, so they rang in. He threw the phone in, and then he started videoing himself.
So, Dennis, you broke up a little bit at the start. Were you expecting the call, did you say?
I was, yeah.
So you were expecting the call. You knew it was coming.
Yeah, I got a couple of calls from them earlier on.
So you just kept going.
just kept going. He kept ringing, which is unfortunate.
So what was the game then?
It was an over 40s Masters game, Leash against Kildare. So there was no importance to it or anything like that. And we had no subs, so I couldn't go off.
We figured that was probably the case, all right.
Yeah, you probably know from the pace of it that we weren't exactly setting the world on
fire. You're doing yourself a disservice, in fairness. I thought you had a bit of a torn of pace when you made sure to give one of those words.
Well, not exactly, no. It's not. You couldn't call it pace, a turn maybe.
Well, Dennis, it's interesting because they say that men can't multitask, but I mean, you have disproved that theory in one go there.
Yeah, no, he went into sort of cruise mode.
Well, you can't be giving out, I don't know if you have children, but you can't be giving out to them now if they're on their phone too much while they're supposed to be doing something else.
No.
So, Dennis, this is the Masters. Where are you? What's the story with the competition then? Is it did you win the match? Are you through? Where are you at?
It was only a warm-up match. I think we played Dublin last week, but we were short of numbers. It was communion season, so we were missing a lot. Got a little bit of a scutching. So the next match, I think, is next weekend or the weekend after next.
Did you make the sale in the end?
Did I which?
Did you make the sale in the end of what you were selling?
I was fixing the machine for somebody.
Okay.
So I did get him sorted. And he never batted an eyelid, never asked, are you okay? Are you being chased by a mountain lion or anything like that? He just stayed talking about the machine.
Go away. Never once asked you what you were doing.
No. I could have been running from a burglar or anything.
That's brilliant. Look, well, you've given us loads of entertainment anyway, and just a little bit of background on you. You're a former footballer, so you do have the skills. You did play a bit of county before, from what I gather.
Just a little bit. I played a bit of underage, maybe, but mainly just club.
Right, well, you're very modest as well. So, Dennis, thank you so much for joining us. It was great because we did get a lot of reaction to the video and you gave an awful lot of people a lot of entertainment. The only problem is, though, you're probably going to start a trend now that it's been done once. We'll probably see lads going out playing matches with phones in their socks, especially if there's big games on, they want to check scores and things like that. But actually having full-blown conversations, that's definitely a new one. Thank you so much and we'll talk to you again soon, I'd say, at some stage.
No problem. Thanks very much for the call.
Talk to you again. David, that is all we have time for. We've had a very busy show. We'll be back tomorrow previewing all of the weekend's action. Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE.
2FM.
Game on.
On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.